Welcome to Between Two Ovaries, your go-to for all things women's health.
A lot of people just say like, oh, my vagina.
Yeah.
And yes. That's all of the above.
That's not your vagina.
No.
Well, it is.
We're here to cut through the confusion, bust some myths, and give you the facts straight from the experts.
You cannot still believe the amount of people that come to a gynecology clinic saying that they don't look right down there and they need something doing about it.
We're keeping it real, bringing you honest conversations about topics that matter to you.
Everything goes back to the menstrual cycle.
Yes. It's a low-risk procedure, but it's not a no-risk procedure.
From periods to menopause and everything in between, we've got you covered.
So whether you're here to learn, laugh, or just listen, you are in the right place.
As soon as I said it.
Hi everyone, welcome to today's episode, Contraceptive Choices, Let's Pill the Tea.
So, contraception, obviously a massive topic, and we wanted to cover it because we feel that there's lots of people that kind of don't know what the choices are, or they get stuck on one form of contraception and they think it doesn't work for them, but they don't think that there's anything else that they can move to. I think it's really important that it's not a one size fits all. You get started on probably the cheapest one to prescribe and the one that it will be though, because it's the NHS. We've got to make money saving when we can. So people will be started on the cheapest, the most available pill to start off with. And if it doesn't work, they're kind of like, oh, the pill doesn't work for me. Don't want to have anything else. And I think it's important to know that there's loads of different contraceptive choices. And if the first one doesn't work, it doesn't even mean you need to move on to another pill. You can move on to a completely different form of contraception. And it's that choice that people should have, but also to understand that they can have different care from different people. So there's not just the GP that they can go to see about the contraception. People need to know about contraception.
Yeah, definitely. And there is, because there's quite a lot of choice, sometimes you can get a little bit confused about what to start with. And I think most people tend to just go with what they have heard of or what their friends have tried. But you might find that there's one that you've not necessarily heard of that would be really suited to you. So it's a good idea to get as much information as you can before you make a choice. And then the other side of it is that we do have a lot of choice, but we haven't got perfect choices for everyone. So each choice does have sort of like pros and cons and drawbacks.
And I think especially in this day and age, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but when a lot of people are kind of against hormones, there is kind of a movement of people that are against hormones. They want to live a sober lifestyle. They want to exercise. They want to be healthy.
Which
and they
good
feel
things?
Well, good things.
There's definitely good things. I do advocate for people to use hormones, especially if you have problems with your periods, because they can really be helpful. But there isn't that many alternatives for people that don't want to use hormones. Yeah. So I think if they have as much information as possible, then they can make the right choice for them at the right time in their life. It might be that when you're 15, 16, the pill might be amazing. And when you're 25, 26 and you're working nights and shifts and you're all over the shop, then the pill just wouldn't work with your lifestyle. Yeah. So it's got to work with your relationship, your lifestyle and your beliefs in the system that you want to use.
And although we do have a long way to go to have perfect contraception choices for everyone, and hence more research will be needed, and we'll touch on some newer things that are coming in at the end. We also have to respect that actually there's been a lot of work that's gone into making hormonal contraception accessible for women and how much of an impact that's had on women's lives. So, you know, you're able, if in 1960 the pill was first introduced, and I think it was initially married women, but then later on it became accessible to everyone. But that means that women were in control of when they get pregnant, when they don't get pregnant, and then therefore can choose not to get pregnant and to have a career, or to get pregnant at a certain time when they want to have
imagine a world with no contraception.
It's crazy.
Terrifying.
Like, you would be you'd be living your life completely different, or most people would be living their lives completely different, making different choices, and it just it shows you how far we've come. And it's free. It's free on the NHS, is contraception. So it's readily available and it's free, which I think is amazing for people, because it means that you're not thinking about, oh, well, I can't afford that, I can't afford to use that, be on it for a long time. But it's free.
Yeah, so, much more accessible.
Yeah, which has gone, like, so many people have pioneered this and have really tried hard to make it accessible, which then it can be a little bit disheartening to see people rejecting it. But it's fine. You know, you can choose whatever contraceptive choice you want. But it's also important to recognise that, like, a lot of work has gone into making this situation so accessible for women.
We are very lucky in the UK to have the NHS. And although there are flaws, and we all know that as working, as doctors working in the NHS, we know there are flaws. But at first point of contact, the NHS is free, contraception is free, nobody is judging you with regards to your choices. And especially with all the news in America at the moment, it blows your mind to think how lucky we are. Exactly. And I think we should bear that in mind.
So we're going to go through different types of contraception. So there's kind of a broad 5 different types that we're going to go through. We'll chat through them all. So the classic barrier methods, condoms, but also diaphragms, which you might have been less aware of. Lorna's face
diaphragms.
Says diaphragm.
It's not like they breathe.
Yes it and is. No. So we'll come on to that. And then we're going to talk about hormonal. So we're going to split that into, so combined hormonal, when you have both estrogen and progestogen, or progestins, and they're in different forms. And then you can have single hormone, which is just progesterone only. And again, that has different forms.
Yes.
Then we've got long-acting reversible, which again are progestin, but different forms again. And then at the end, we've got fertility tracking or natural methods, and also more permanent methods, which, although they are permanent, still have a failure rate. We'll talk about that as well.
So, should we start with the barrier methods first of all? So, everybody will have heard of male condoms. It's kind of what you get taught in school. Mm-hmm. It's like probably the one kind of...
the first thing.
your repro lecture about kind of how to stop getting pregnant, and also, very importantly, how to prevent STIs. So the other forms of contraception won't prevent STIs. So your barrier method is going to stop you from getting a sexually transmitted infection. Your other forms of contraception aren't going to do that. So when we said before about life choices, stages of life, then depending on if you've got a steady partner or if you are sleeping with various different people, you really need to think about using barrier methods of contraception, because you really don't want to have a sexually transmitted infection. Or if you do have a sexually transmitted infection, you need it treating quickly to prevent long-term problems.
I've just had a really weird thought. This might be a total tangent, but I was reading a book a while ago about, like, the history of the condom and, like, what it was before. It's like
what
medical women. I can't remember the title, but it was really interesting about, like, how we got to the condom that we have today, because obviously it's like plastic, isn't it? Like latex. It started off as cloth around a penis, which clearly wouldn't be very effective.
No.
But then they started to kind of design them a bit better, but they would be like rigid plastic or rigid like leather, sometimes caked with things like animal dung to make it more
delicious.
Oh, what, instead of a spermicide?
Yeah, well, you know, this is long medieval times. There was no such thing as spermicide then.
Imagine putting animal dung inside you.
But that's how desperate people were to stop getting pregnant at that point. So they're much better now.
We've come a long way.
And now they're into a little packet in your pocket or in one of those nice vending machines in the toilets of the club.
And again, free. So free from your family planning. You can get a bag full of condoms and do with them what you please. Condoms, if used properly, are really, really very effective. The problem is that condoms a lot of the times aren't used properly. So you don't use the right size, you're not putting it on at the right time, you're putting it on too late, you're removing it too early. So there's lots
of... Not checking the expiry date.
Yeah. Not storing them properly as well.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things with condoms you've got to think about. But if it's like an in-the-moment situation, you're not using a longer-term contraception, then a barrier method of contraception is a perfect choice.
Yeah.
So a lot of the contraceptives, what they do is they have a typical use failure rate and an actual, if you use it effective, failure rate, which is quite interesting, isn't it?
Still there.
So condoms, if you use them properly, are 98% effective.
Okay, so if you're perfect, they're almost perfect.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'd like to know what percent of people use them correctly.
Well, so they say with the typical use, it's about 18% of people will not be using them correctly.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, Bridget Jones, baby, she used condoms from like 20, 30 years before and ended up getting pregnant.
I know that. What a shock.
It's maybe not real. But
well, you know, it's a life lesson.
We can learn from Bridget Jones. We can learn a lot from Bridget Jones.
When someone mentioned the new Bridget Jones film, they mentioned about her having children, and I was like, I've clearly missed some films because
did you not know that she.
Oh, well, I didn't know she had a kid. So.
Never seen any of them.
It's a full.
I need to see the latest ones,
too. Full film. Oh, it's really good.
Definitely missed that. Then there's also diaphragms, just to touch on that, because that is another barrier method. Well, also this female condoms, you know, they do exist.
Yeah, well, when you said diaphragms, I thought you were meaning a female condom.
No, they're different again.
Different. Yeah. We got shown them in school, and it was very strange.
Yeah, it's just still don't really understand.
It's like a big plastic bag.
Yeah.
It's
I don't know anyone. That
I feel like
uses
that would be even more failure rate than a normal condom, because a condom you can see that you can put it on a penis and it's fitting
you've got
the penis.
Seal,
if you're putting something into your vagina, like I think there'd be a risk of the penis would go at the side.
That's a good point.
Or could you get it stuck inside?
Yes, you could. Yeah, but then as
remember,
we said, the vagina is a blind tube, so you will be able to retrieve it even if you need a bit of help.
Yeah.
But a diaphragm is different. So a diaphragm is. With you mentioning the diaphragm in your lungs, it's, I guess, kind of like a similar idea. It's like a circular thing, like a plastic ring.
Do you know what it reminds me of? And I don't know if you know about these. Do you know when you used to have those toys when you were a kid that you turned it upside down, put it on there, and it bounced
off? Yes, that's such a good, like,
That is good.
So it's literally like a diaphragm.
Yeah.
And it's got like a, you know, silicon or latex plastic kind of like... bit to it.
And does this go inside the vagina?
It goes inside your vagina, basically. Well, not yours, but you know, if you choose to use it, it would be yours. So it's not like as big as I've made it look there. It's quite small. Some people put spermicide on the inside as well. So then that would then sit up next to your cervix. You put it in before sex, you take it out after. You don't leave it in all the time. And then the benefit of that is there's no hormones.
Yep.
You're in control of it, but it's a similar thing to a condom. It's not to be used properly.
You do
have to use it properly for it to be effective. And it's more effective if you use spermicide with it as well. Yeah.
So they're your barrier methods, and that's it.
And that's it,
basically, for a barrier method choice. So we will move quite swiftly on, because most of the choices are going to be hormonal based, because that is just what is fundamentally available. So your hormonal methods are split into those that have got two hormones in and those that have got one hormone in, which is what we discussed before. So your combined have got estrogen and progesterone in, whereas your single ones have only got progesterones in. So the combined ones are the ones that won't be suitable for everybody. So your combined ones are a combined pill, a patch, or a ring.
The lesser known ones, but good choices. Yeah. Like, it might suit you well.
So different ones are suited for different people, but these are the three choices. And they work by stopping you from ovulating, making the lining of your womb thinner. So a pregnancy doesn't implant because that lining of your womb is thin rather than nice and ready. When we've discussed before about fertility, we want that lining of the womb to be thick and ready to collect an embryo, basically. But these hormones would stop that from happening. And they also change your cervical mucus, so they make it really sticky. So we've talked about normal vaginal discharge, and at different times of your cycle, your vaginal discharge will be clear and runny, and that's because it's kind of ready for sperms, and it's kind of enhancing their transport, basically. Whereas when you're on the combined oral contraceptive pill or any of the other combined methods, your cervical mucus will be really sticky, so a bit against sperms coming in. So it works in lots of different ways.
And it's not to say that you'll have loads of sticky vaginal discharge. It's actually like in the cervix itself, where it needs to be. It's more of a blocking agent to stop the sperm swimming through. And a really important thing about combined combined contraceptives, pill, patch, ring, is that they generally stop ovulation.
Yeah.
So not all contraceptives stop ovulation. Mm. And for some people, that's really important, because for some religions, it's important to not ovulate and not have the chance of a sperm meeting an egg, because that would be considered not acceptable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So certain religions will only want to have, women of certain religions will only want to use something that definitely prevents ovulation, mm-hmm. not a contraception that prevents implantation.
Okay.
Which
so
is important.
With that, you know, on the pill, a lot of people think the... Well, traditionally, you take the 21 days, yeah. you have 7 days off.
Yeah.
But if you've not ovulated, do you need that 7 days off?
You don't need the 7 days off at all. Okay. So the 7 days off is a withdrawal bleed. Mm-hmm. So there's various different people that are like, oh, God, I wouldn't want to be without a period. Like, no. I need to have my bleed, which I...
can't get on board with.
I cannot get on board with.
Like
I'm all about the no hassle, no period yeah. situation. But some people like that bleed and... But it is a withdrawal bleed.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that you're not pregnant.
No.
You shouldn't be pregnant if you're taking your pill properly.
Yeah, be pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah, but you shouldn't be pregnant if you're taking your pill as you should. So what they say a lot of times nowadays is that you can take your pill back to back. Mm. So instead of having a 7 day pill-free break, you just take the pill every single day.
Yeah.
And some people do that. They will do it for 3 months and then have a bleed. Some people will do it until they start having a bleed and then take 4 or 7 days off and then restart the pill.
Okay.
Because at some point, if you're taking it back to back to back mm-hmm. to back to back, you're probably going to have a bleed.
Mm-hmm. And at least you can predict when it's going to be.
Yeah. Some people won't, mm-hmm. but a lot of people will. So instead of having that, am I going to bleed when I don't want to because I'm going on holiday or I'm doing whatever, mm-hmm. then they would time and have a bleed, say, every
That's
3 months.
That's good, I like that.
Yeah. And you can do that with all of the combined methods, so the pill, the patch, and the ring.
I want to know more about this ring.
Yeah, you can back-to-back them all, so they work in the same way.
Yeah.
Or you can kind of... have 3 weeks on, 1 week off. The only situation where that doesn't fit is there are some newer pills, newer combined pills, that the strength in pills are different on different days.
Oh, okay.
So these newer pills, instead of having a 21-day pack and then you have a seven-day break, they would have 28 days in the pack.
Oh, and each day's
so
different.
Some of them have false pills, so pills that you take every day so that you don't forget to take them, but actually they've got nothing in them. Mm-hmm. They've got no active ingredients. And some of them have a bit of active ingredient. So they have different pills on different days.
Yeah.
So there are certain pills that you need to be... you're going to carry on having periods just because if they're in a 28-day pack, they're going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
So all the ones that people are used to, 21 days, you can back-to-back them or have that 7-day break. Some people even have a 4-day break.
Yeah.
So if you're concerned, worried, unsure, speak to someone about it.
Yeah.
Like, people do this day in, day out for a job. Everybody's quite happy to have a little chat. There's a really good information leaflet
a really
that comes
long
with these
information
things.
Leaflet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there'll be a key information.
There's
will be
like a key information bit about
missing pills, which we'll cover a bit as well.
Yeah, but I think with regards to yes, you can take it all the time. You will probably have a bleed at some point, and you can then just take your pill after that. There's only a couple of pills on the market that have 28 days in the packet, and if you have one of those kind of pills, then you would be taking it every day anyway because it's 28 days in a packet, so you would never have a break, but you're going to have a withdrawal bleed on those.
And then the patch is similar, so it's combined on your skin.
Anywhere?
Yeah, you can put it anywhere.
Well, not anywhere, you wouldn't put it on the breast.
Yeah.
Okay. So arm, leg, thigh, buttocks.
Some people might be like, oh.
It would be a good, like, hidden spot. We could put it there and no one could see it.
Exactly.
You wear a bikini
or something. So because it's an estrogen, you wouldn't put it on your breast, but you can put it on your arm, your bottom,
your thigh. Most people tend to go thigh, bum, tummy.
Okay, still, like, and how big is this part?
Just little.
Just like a plaster?
I think they're 5 centimetres by 5 centimetres, so pretty small. And they're, well, I say skin coloured, which is not helpful at all, is it? Because nobody's got the same coloured skin.
No.
But they're supposed to be discreet.
Okay.
I guess if you don't want people to see it, put it on where your underwear is. Put it under, put it on your bum.
It'll be one of those things that if you can see your contraceptive patch and you've got a bikini on, then your bikini's too small. We'll have that as a rule. Okay.
I like the same.
Eleanor, that is
do they do different colours of these or just the
I don't.
Right, they need to get on the market for this because...
They need to accommodate everyone.
Yeah.
Well, I think mostly you would think that they're going to be underclothes.
Yeah.
So the only one that's available in the UK is one called Evra.
Okay.
That's the only one licensed here, basically. Mm-hmm. But it works in the same way, exactly the same as what the pill that we said, but and also you can use it in the same way. So you change it every 7 days and back-to-back it or change it for 3 weeks, have a week off.
Okay.
You have to remember to change it every week. So if you're not good at changing things or like...
Maybe not for you.
Well, you'd need to maybe set an alarm that on a Sunday evening you were going to change it. Yeah.
And what would happen... If you left the one on for ages?
Well, it's the same as the pill, so you're missing pills.
Yeah.
So basically, if it's on for more than 48 hours after what it should be on, then you need to use barrier methods of contraception.
Yeah. Or if you take it off, forget to put it on, and then 2 days pass, same applies. You're not protected, so you need to use condoms or something for 5 days.
So... in the same instances like a HRT, they shouldn't come off. You should be able to shower in them. You should be able to swim in them. Mm-hmm. They're very sticky. Some people do have skin irritation, so it's not one for them. Mm-hmm. So if you do find that your skin's really irritated, then it's probably not going to be the right answer for you.
Yeah.
Most people could have a bit of skin irritation at the beginning and it calms down.
Oh,
it's like you get used to it.
Yeah.
You need to change where your patch goes as well, so every 7 days. So don't take it off your left arm and put it back on your left arm. Take it off your left arm, put it on your right arm, because, again, skin irritation.
Yeah.
But could you move it somewhere else on your left arm?
Well, okay, I suppose you could if there's a bit more of a gap on your arm.
You've got a long arm.
Don't think it'd be for me.
Move it down.
That's fine, it's not for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Oh, if you put it on your bum though, maybe you shouldn't fit it on your bum.
You could just have a patch. Maybe two machines.
And then there's also the ring, which is very similar.
She?
So she is...
Assume it's not a ring.
A contraceptive ring that goes in your vagina.
Okay. Not on your finger.
On your finger.
No. So again, has the combined hormones. And it's a very thin plastic ring that you can tuck inside your vagina right at the top. Change it every 3 weeks. And technically, you or your partner may feel it, but it shouldn't be a problem. It's similar to like the Merino coil threads. You know, you might notice it, but it's not going to be painful or cause any problems. Mm. And so a small number of people might get a little bit of irritation. And if that's the case, then recommend just going and get an examination and check in if maybe you should try something different if there's a problem there. But just another nice, like, another flexible option. 3 weeks is a long time. You don't have to think about it. It'll stay in there.
But you need to remember to change it after 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So another alarm.
Quite a good one because it's quite localised.
It works in exactly the same way.
Yeah.
So it's just
like
the same hormones, same way. But again, I think it's just that whole remembering to change it every 3 weeks.
I think I'd forget because I wouldn't be able to like see it.
I
like
almost
the patch I'd see.
Feel like it's harder than the commitment of a pill every day because at least you're used to it when you have a pill every day.
Yeah. Every 3 weeks. Has it been 3 weeks? Has it been four? Has it been five?
Yeah, which wouldn't be ideal at all. With regards to the patch, it's the only... I know I'm backtracking slightly, but I just remembered that it's the only one that they say might not be as efficient if you weigh over 90 kilos.
Okay.
Yeah. So just to be aware of, some people would weigh over 90 kilos, especially if they're very tall or if they're a bit overweight. So it's just something, potentially it's not the right hormonal contraception for you.
Yeah. Then we think about starting these combined contraceptives.
Yeah,
if it's in the first day of the first 5 days of your cycle, so which would be your period basically, so day one is the first day of your period, up to day five. If you start it in that time frame, then you're protected from, so it works effectively then, so you're protected from pregnancy.
Okay.
If it's any other point in your cycle, you should use additional barrier contraceptives for 7 days.
Yeah.
7 days.
You should make sure you're not pregnant as well before you start using it.
Yeah.
That's valid.
Yeah. And so make sure that you've not had unprotected sexual intercourse in the preceding time, and then use barrier methods for 7 days afterwards if you've not started.
So those barrier methods are handy sometimes.
Yeah.
They're a good backup.
They're a good backup, yeah.
So just with the ring and with the patch, 48 hours. If you're within 48 hours that you've not changed it, it's fine. You don't need anything extra. If you're outside of 48 hours, 7 days of barrier methods of contraception.
Okay. Yeah, so it's a theme that comes up quite
a lot.
So because, as we mentioned, combined have got estrogen progesterone versions in them, a lot of the problems with the combined comes from the fact that there is estrogen there.
Okay, yeah.
So as in, that is what causes most of the risks associated with the combined pill. So
you need to start it in your first 5 days, but you can't just start it. So you need to see a medical provider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You need to check your weight and your height. So work out what your BMI is, mm-hmm. and check your blood pressure as well. And every year that needs doing. You can't mm-hmm. just stay on it ad hoc, because when you're 32 and your BMI is 30, it might be really very appropriate choice for you. But when you're 36, 37 and your BMI is 36, 37, then it's an inappropriate choice yeah. for you.
And so the reason for that is because yeah. estrogen increases your risk, additional estrogen increases your risk of blood clots and also stroke as well.
So that why migraines are like a yes. counter?
So if you have migraine with an aura,
yeah.
an aura being like a visual the aura lights. Or something like that, that precedes your headache,
mm-hmm.
you're already at a slightly higher risk of stroke.
Yeah.
yeah.
So then if you have anything that puts you at a slightly higher risk of stroke or blood clots already, like migraine with aura, mm-hmm. a high BMI, smoker, any cardiovascular disease, mm-hmm. the combined contraceptives are not going to be for you, because that's going to put you at a higher risk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's why you need to have your blood pressure checked yeah. and your weight checked.
It's a little tick box that you need to go through to make sure it's appropriate. It's find it. You've listened to this and being like, combined pill, that sounds amazing.
Sounds ideal.
But actually, it might not be appropriate
yeah.
for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is fine. It's not going to be appropriate for everybody.
Mm-hmm. There's more options.
Yeah, there is loads more options. You also are advised to stop taking the pill and use an alternative form of contraception if you're going to have major surgery or... Oh. If you're going on a long flight, you need to think about mobilising, because if there's another risk factor for a clot in your leg or your lung, you've already got one by being on the pill.
Yeah.
So try and decrease it by doing yeah. things to get over it. So yeah. if you're trekking at high altitude, stop taking the pill.
Yeah.
If you're going to have major surgery, if you're going to be immobile, we need to think about other forms of contraception for you.
Yeah, I guess because of that, you generally find that people who are on combined contraceptive are usually younger, no medical problems. Problems, low BMI, non-smokers. Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, you can use it up to the age of 50.
Yeah.
So if you are a non-smoker, if you have a normal BMI,
mm-hmm.
then you can use it up to the age of 50 for contraception. And also it can be used as like part of HRT.
Oh, okay.
So it's estrogen and progesterone. So it would be giving you the hormones that you potentially would be lacking in.
Yeah.
So it can be used as your HRT. It's not going to make your menopause earlier or later, but it can mask the symptoms, because if you are deficient in estrogen, but actually you're not deficient in estrogen because you're taking the pill, then it can be a good thing in that sense. But as I said, it's not suitable for everybody. And especially when you're getting over 35 even, if you're a smoker, it's really not suitable. If your BMI is increased, it's definitely not suitable. So it needs to be a decision at that point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's versatile.
Yeah.
So benefits, so why would you actually want, if you think, I think I'm eligible, I'd like to try this pill,
mm-hmm.
what are the good things about it? So, well, basically we sometimes use it to treat things like heavy, painful periods.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have heavy or painful periods, then it might actually improve your life as well as giving you mm-hmm. good contraception. It can help with PMS symptoms, so premenstrual symptoms mm-hmm. as well.
It's fundamentally a very good form of contraception.
Yeah,
but again, if you remember to take it every day.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah. Perfect use.
I see that.
Aim for perfect use.
Aim for perfect use, and it's great.
And then certain pills, so there's lots and lots of them.
Yeah.
So within your bracket of combined oral contraceptive pill, there's lots of different types with slightly different hormones in them, and some have like particular benefits. Mm-hmm. Some are really good for acne.
Yeah.
Some are good for weight gain. Not for weight gain. Some are good at preventing weight gain rather than some will have a risk of you might gain weight on it. But yeah, there's, I think a lot of people have probably heard of certain pills that are meant to be good for women who have acne or PCOS as well. There's certain pills that are good for that.
There's definitely pills that are great for PCOS sufferers. And when people have had surgical management of endometriosis, what we do is we like to regulate hormones after, and that can be in the form of various different things that we're not going to go into today, but the combined pill can be one of those things that would be useful to decrease the risk of kind of reoccurrence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it can also decrease your risk of ovarian, endometrial and bowel cancer while you're using it, but also after you've stopped.
Okay.
Which is a really nice benefit.
That's
yeah.
like a nice.
I feel like people always think there's a bad side to being on hormones, and
there's definitely
loads of good things. Yeah. It will help your periods. Mm-hmm. It can regulate your periods. It can mean that you don't have periods if you don't want to have periods. And also, it significantly decreases your risk of ovarian and endometrial cancer for a long time span after you've stopped taking the pill, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great.
That being said, there are some downsides.
Yeah. We always have all the good stuff.
It's not all amazing. So, as we mentioned, the risk of blood clots or you know, cardiovascular issues like stroke.
But the overall risk is still tiny.
Still small.
Yeah. So being pregnant, for example, would be a much bigger risk factor for having a blood clot than being on the pill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's what you perceive as a risk.
Yeah.
It does increase your overall risk, but the risk is still tiny.
Pretty small, yeah.
And if you're someone that doesn't have any risks of having a blood clot and then you're on the pill, that's very safe. Mm-hmm. You're very, very unlikely to then get a blood clot. The other thing, as we mentioned, so it doesn't protect you against STIs, any of the combined contraceptives that are not barriers. Do not. So although it protects you against ovarian, endometrial, bowel cancer, there is a very small increased risk of breast cancer. Again, it's still very, very, very small, mm-hmm. but it's still there. So it's something that you would be counselled about beforehand. Mm-hmm. And if you have like a strong family history of breast cancer, then it wouldn't be suitable for you. Yeah.
There's a small increased risk of cervical cancer as well if you take it for more than 5 years. People should be in the cervical screening program.
Which reduces your risk.
Your risk. So it's, I feel like everything is, it does this, but there is also this.
So that's why it's like, you make the right decision for you based on what your uniqueness, your family, your worries.
Your set things that are better for other people.
Yeah. Again, time of life, what fits in with your life. Mm-hmm. There's so many things to consider, I think. Mm-hmm.
And then with, so obviously we're talking about combined contraceptives, there's pill, patch, ring, but with the pill, if you have diarrhea and vomiting, or if you're on certain medications which are called enzyme inducers, which mean that your liver metabolizes certain drugs a bit faster, mm-hmm. then it might make the pill less effective.
Yeah. Okay.
So you might need to take barrier methods for like a certain amount of time, mm-hmm. Usually 7 days, until that has passed.
That's do it for a week.
To know, because I think a lot of people don't realize that if you have vomiting and diarrhea, that it's.
If you've vomited within a couple of hours of you having the pill, then the pill hasn't been absorbed, basically.
Yeah.
So when you think about it like that, you're like, that totally makes sense. Yeah. I can see why that would be a thing.
It's human error, isn't it?
Yeah, and also if you're not very well with DMV, you might not take your pill. It's back to that kind of what should you do situation. Mm-hmm. With the enzyme inducers that Alison just mentioned, it's really interesting because I think loads of people think that if you go on antibiotics, the pill won't work, which is actually untrue. Mm. So if most antibiotics will not affect the pill one iota, it's only the enzyme inducers that affect the
pill. Of which there's not that many of them. And if your GP is prescribing you an enzyme inducer, you should be counselled about that.
They should see
none of the antibiotics that we use for like a chest infection, a throat infection, a urine infection.
The common ones.
None of those would be enzyme inducers. Yeah. So I suppose it's that whole having a little look, seeing if it's an enzyme inducer. Mm. The other thing though that can actually affect the pill, which people go on not thinking that it will affect anything, and it's the same in lots of different reasons. St. John's wort.
Have you heard of St. John's wort?
I've heard of.
It's like a herbal supplement. A lot of people take
it. Do you think it's like from a bit ago now?
No, yeah. I've definitely heard
of it. My mum has taken it, I think, at some point. Like, I definitely saw it in the cupboard when I was a kid.
St. John's
wort? So it's supposed to be like
wort.
Like
a wort?
No.
With an O.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know where the name comes from.
Never heard of it.
It's something that some people take.
It's a herbal thing for depression.
Oh.
And you can just buy it from Holland & Barrett. So you wouldn't then be counselled about, okay, but this might affect your pill.
It affects lots of different things, actually. But it's one of those things that when you go and see a medical practitioner because you were going to start a medication, tell us everything that you're on.
Yeah.
Don't just tell us that you're not on any medications, but you're actually taking...
I do always wonder that. When, like... you've got something and it says, are you on any medication? I'm like, should I tell them what I'm on for contraception?
Yeah,
like,
you should.
Okay,
yeah,
good to know. Yeah. I'll start doing that.
Yeah, because there's a lot of things that can be affected. Just stuff like when people come for in a fertility setting, but they're actually taking testosterone or they're taking gym supplements or the gym supplements. These can all affect, and people don't realise because it's something that they've bought at the gym or it's something that they've bought from a friend or like...
Home bargains.
As you said, Holland and Barrett, like if it's that kind of thing, you don't think, well, it's not going to be anything that will affect anything. Yeah.
But even just Amazon, people buy lots of
Well, if you can't get it from Amazon, is it worth getting?
Yeah,
that's probably what you need to
ask yourself.
So then, obviously, there is a failure rate, and as we said before, you've got your perfect and your typical. So if you're perfect at taking your combined contraceptive pill patch ring, then it's 99% effective. But in reality, we are not perfect.
How do we actually do?
So it's more, so there's a 7% failure rate. So 7 in 100 women will get pregnant because they're not taking it perfectly.
Okay, so 99 if you're pregnant. If you're 99 pregnant, if you're perfect.
Yeah.
93 if you're normal.
Normal.
Yeah. Okay, that's still pretty good.
It is still pretty good, but... You, again, risk. How do you feel about getting pregnant? 7 in 100. Do you know 100 people?
Yeah. Like, I feel 7 in 100 is more than you think. 7 in 100 sounds more than 93%.
So it depends what kind of person you are. If it's a pill, if you know that you're going to take it every day and you're aware of all the things that might make it less effective, you're going to be fine. Mm. But if you're a bit scatty, if you are, you know, you don't have a normal
routine.
You travel a lot, or your work schedule's all over the place, then it might be better if you have something you don't have to remember to take every day.
Yeah, agree. So I think a lot of people worry about ovulation returning because these stop you from ovulating. Yeah. But 98% of people will ovulate by 90 days.
So if you want to get pregnant, have a little 3-month washout period, and then you should be ovulating again regularly after that.
I mean, some people will get pregnant as soon as they come off the pill.
Yeah.
And some people, it will take longer. Some people can take up to 6 months to start ovulating.
Yeah.
But your ovulation will return. It just might take a bit of time.
Yeah.
And then what to do if you miss a pill. So if it's within that sort of fit, so you wake up, it's Monday, you forgot to take your pill, and then you realise on Tuesday, if you just take the missed pill as soon as you can, as soon as you remember.
So you could have 2 pills in one day.
And then take the pill you're meant to take.
That's not framed.
You'll be fine. Mm-hmm. If 48 hours have passed, then you're not covered. So again, take the next pill in your packet, but you need to use barrier methods for 7 days.
So if you've missed 2 days, don't take three at once.
And all that information will be in your specific pill as well, like your, information.
And if people have questions, they can definitely ask.
Yeah.
Whoever ask they got it from.
Yeah. If you're not sure, use condoms or avoid sex for 7 days, you know.
Because realistically, if you've missed it in the first few days, it's not going to do anything, but also you want to make sure that you are covered. So take
don't
your
want a
pill,
sneaky egg to come out of your ovary.
Give yourself 7 days. If you don't want to be pregnant.
Anything else on those?
The combined, any other things that we need to cover?
I don't think so. That was pretty comprehensive.
Cool. Okay.
What about the single hormone?
Single hormone. So this is no estrogen, so just a version of progesterone, there's many different types. Mm-hmm. So this is known as the mini pill for the pill form.
The pop.
The progesterone only pill, pill. And then there's also the depot injection, which we can cover as part of this as well, because they're both... not considered long-acting, which we'll come on to next. So the mini pill is, or the pop, is just a progesterone-based pill. The main difference with that and the combined is that you don't have to have a break. You are meant to take it every day.
Not that you have to have a break with the estrogen one either.
No, but it's not an option with the pop.
You have to take it every day.
And then also you don't have those sort of risks that come with the estrogen portion of the combined. So it's probably a little bit more universal. More people can take it safely than
is
the combined.
Is this more suitable for people who've got migraine with aura?
Yep. If you have migraine with aura, if you smoke, if you've got a higher BMI,
if you're older,
anything that puts you at higher risk of those blood clots and stroke that we talked about before, you'll be more suitable for a mini pill or a pop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it works again by thinning out the lining of the womb, so preventing implantation that way, changing the cervical mucus again by making it thicker. Mm-hmm. Some people, it can prevent ovulation. So. Yeah. there's a proportion of people that won't ovulate, there's a proportion of people that will ovulate.
And you won't know. You won't have any idea.
You just hope you get in the grip you want to be in.
Yeah. The problem with the progesterone-only pill is that you get a lot more unscheduled bleeding. Mm. With the combined pill, as we discussed before, well, any of the combined hormones, you can schedule when you're going to have a bleed.
Yeah.
Or when you have a bleed because you've taken it back to back for 3-4 months, you know that it's going to stop within 4 or 5 days, and then you can restart the pill. The progesterone-only pill people fall out of love with because they don't have regular periods, but they do have periods,
random,
or they have random bleeding
here and there that you can't predict. Can be a bit annoying.
Yeah.
Some people, it's like a bedding in period, and they need to have it for 3-4 months, and they will be totally fine. They won't have periods at all, or they'll have regular light periods. So it's difficult to predict what group you're going to fall into. You would have to wait and see.
Yeah, a bit of trial and error.
And is that the same if you had the injection? Because it's still the one hormone. So you might still bleed, you might not.
On the progesterone, on the injection, mostly people don't bleed.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a bit better in that sense. You're more likely to have no periods.
People love it. The people that don't want to have periods that are young and that are on the depot and they're loving their life, it's because they don't bleed.
Yeah. But then equally, you know, if you're a lucky person that on the progesterone-only pill you have no periods, you'll be doing the same.
Yeah, you're doing like, an injection.
Most of the time,
It blew my mind, actually, because I assumed that the, for example, depot is not the only progesterone injection that you can get, but it's the most, I think it's the one that most people have heard about. I thought that would be a long acting reversible contraceptive,
but it's not considered a long acting. It must be like maybe because it's, so we will talk about this a bit more, but the depot injection, the progesterone injection lasts for 12 to 13 weeks.
That's quite a long time.
So in a year, you'd only need 4 of them in 1 year.
You go back
4 times a year to have an injection.
Maybe it's because it's not actually reversible. Like at that time.
Because once it's in your system, it's in your system.
Yeah, you can't take it out.
Yeah. But it is reversible. Your fertility does come back out.
But you can't. I suppose it depends how
you. You can't just take it back out. Yeah.
Maybe long acting, there has to be, you know, something that can last up to a year.
Yeah.
We'll have to find out. But yeah, it's progestogen only and very, you know, similar side effects to the progesterone only pill as well, which is why we've kind of grouped them together. So the pill, the progesterone-only pill, very effective again. It's safer if you're breastfeeding, which is nice to know as well. We've kind of talked about the benefits, haven't we? Yeah. Drawbacks, any main?
Irregular bleeding.
The irregular bleeding.
Is the POP, the only pill, is it the one that you have to take more consistently in your time?
More consistently. Yeah. So the older generation, old ones, you had a 3-hour window. So it was really important that you took your pill at the same time every day. And if you missed that 3-hour window, you would be at risk of pregnancy. They do still exist, so people might be on those. Yeah. But more generally, we prescribe something that has a 12-hour window, which gives you a bit more leniency. But you do still need to take your pill at the same time
every day. Still not as much as the combined pill.
I do think as well it's quite... like makes it better if you have a set time to take it.
Yeah.
If you take it every day when you wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
It feels
but
a bit
the difference
easier to remember.
Is like on a school morning in inverted commas, you might get up at like 5 and on a Saturday and Sunday you might wake up at...
I feel like it's different for everyone, isn't it?
Yeah.
What time would work for you.
The 12-hour window is much better, much more lenient. So then on that, if you miss, so you wake up on Monday, you normally take your pill at 8, you realise Monday evening you forgot, just take that pill then. You're still within your 12-hour window, you're okay. But if you're more than 12 hours, so if on Tuesday you wake up and you're like, oh, I didn't take my pill yesterday.
Panic wake up in the middle of the night.
Then you're not covered, so you'd need to use barrier methods for 7 days. If you had sex on Monday and you're technically at risk of pregnancy, you may need to take emergency contraception on the next,
and
you know,
stop
Tuesday.
Taking the progesterone-only pill for a while because then that can affect the emergency contraception.
There's two different types of emergency contraception pill, 11L and Ella-1.
Yeah.
11L, you're safe, but Ella-1 affects the effectiveness of the progesterone-only pill.
Yeah.
So if you're on the progesterone-only pill and you take olipristal acetate, which is also called Ella-1, then you need to take barrier methods for 7 days. Or just use levonorgestrel, it's a better one to take.
Yeah. So I think with these kind of things, it's all right us just saying them out loud now, but just consult someone and ask the question if it happens to you. Because your what's happened to you is probably going to be quite individual.
And if you get the emergency contraceptive pill, you always chat to a pharmacist and they're really, really qualified and knowledgeable and can advise you on these things. So don't panic, don't worry. No one's going to be like, oh, who's this girl coming in for emergency contraception? It's fine. People need it sometimes.
That's
they'll give you the right information.
And pharmacists must see it like every day. Like, they're
absolutely
not fazed by it.
They don't really mind. It's like us with examinations, you know, we don't remember what you look like. The pharmacist doesn't remember your face when they've talked to you about emergency contraception. Yeah, you're fine.
So again, proper use. The failure rate is really small. So
good.
Failure rate of 1%, so 1 in 100 if you use it properly. So the same as the combined pill, basically. And again, if you stop taking it, your fertility will return to normal quite quickly. So again, totally reversible, out of your system.
That's the pill.
Yep.
And also, just to mention that the we'll talk about the injection a bit more, like specifics of the injection in a sec. But with like the combined and the progesterone pills, patches and rings, pills, patch rings, they do have side effects, which we touched on a little bit. So like, a lot of people are worried about the side effects of these hormonal contraceptives. It might involve mood changes, skin changes, breast tenderness, weight gain. All of these things could happen, might not necessarily happen, and you might be more susceptible to them on like certain pills and not others. So if you're having a side effect that doesn't agree with you, doesn't mean you can't take a pill. If you want to be taking a pill, you might just have to try a different one. And it is a bit of trial and error, but
I think it's just trial and error.
Like,
you don't always get the same coffee from, if you get a latte from Costa, it's not going to be the same as a latte from
Nice
Degrees.
And
you
have,
do you know what I mean? I feel like everywhere is going to be slightly different. And the pills, although contain two hormones or one hormone, they have different preparations, different types, different amounts.
People usually try them as well and go back, and if it's not working, you can swap.
Definitely.
One. It's not a be-all, end-all situation.
Definitely do a little swap.
About finding what works for you.
Exactly. And then, so we've talked a lot about the progesterone-only injectable contraception, the Depo Provera. So there's just a few bits that we've probably missed. It works in the same way as the progesterone-only pill, so it thickens the cervical mucus, thins the lining of the womb. Some people ovulate, some people don't. It's very effective. It lasts 12 to 13 weeks.
I guess that takes away, like, me doing it wrong.
Totally.
Someone's doing it for me.
Although we were discussing recently that there is a... It's not a Depo because it's a progesterone-only injectable because it's not called Depo. I think it begins with an S, actually. that you can give yourself.
Oh, no, thank you.
But so, for some people, like, I would. I was on a Depo, I'd rather do it at home myself than have to go into the clinic four times a year.
It saves your trip. I just
so then you would need to just go to the clinic once a year because they'd give you enough for the whole year.
And you need to remember to do it.
I think that's pretty cool.
Put it in your calendar.
And it's really good for bleeding problems. So it's amazing. Basically just stops you from bleeding on the whole.
There are some downsides that are slightly different to the progesterone-only pill. One thing is that fertility, so it doesn't affect your fertility long term, but after stopping it, it takes a bit longer for your fertility to return. So it can take up to 2 years.
Oh, wow.
But in most people, it's usually around 9 months to a year. And that's just because it takes a while before you start to ovulate again.
Well, it's that, you remember the little graphs at school where there's like a hump in the road, a hump in the road. So it's going to be cumulative. So you'll have a hump in the road, and then that will add to the next lump in the road that will add to the next lump in the road. And you don't actually know where you are to drop down in the end, because you've got to have a massive dose of this medication to make sure that you're not going to get pregnant for that long. So you're not taking this weekly. It's not as slow release, in a sense. You need a big dose to cover you for that long.
So it takes a while to get that out of your system, and then
it's not that reversible there. Not as instant.
It's not reversible as instant in the long term, but if you've had the injection,
it's fully reversible.
Getting
back to that
instant change.
The other thing that people, we don't like people to be on the Depo for forever, is for bone density. It can affect your bone density, so it can decrease your bone density, which is not what we want to do, especially when you're putting down your bone density when you're younger and you're exercising and you're trying to gain as much bone density as possible, knowing that that's going to drift off when you go through the menopause. So we don't want people to be on Depo for
a long time,
20 years.
Till they're 50.
Or if you've already got like a risk of having low you know, weaker bones, low bone density. So say you've had an unexplained fracture already, or you've got a low BMI, or, you know, you're very fragile or anything like that, you probably shouldn't have the depot. But if you're young, fit, you're exercising regularly, you will have strong bones. It's a really good form of contraception.
Yeah. Well, if you're remembering to take it, if you're going to the clinic and having it done, it's 0.2%. So we were talking about 1% before.
0.2,
so 0.2 people, which is not even a person, out of 100.
Which is like 2 in 1,000, isn't it? Only 2 in 1,000 people would get pregnant.
Well, I was definitely wrong. I'm not going to say what I thought it was.
Dad, you're supposed to be a scientist. You should do that more than me.
And then the only other thing to mention is just with the injection, you know, say you've had a busy life and you realise, oh my God, it's been 15 weeks since I had my last injection. At 15 weeks, you're not protected.
Okay.
So get your injection when you can, as soon as possible, but use barrier contraceptive methods for 7 days after starting and when you realise that you're out of the window. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So barrier. Good option for some people, not for everybody.
Yeah.
And it's that choice, which is what we discussed at the beginning. I know that I don't want to have periods, but I also know that I don't want to have the depot because I think it's kind of random that you have an injection that your level of hormone is really high for so long and you can't take it back out again. I don't
know. But there'll be some people that think this is the best thing in the world.
Oh my gosh, we have so many people.
I mean, it can't follow, can it?
No, no periods. It's not going to be wrong.
Very effective at preventing pregnancy.
No. Can't go anywhere.
Yeah. So if you're scared of needles, probably not breaking.
Yeah. It might get rid of your fear of needles. Exposure therapy.
Shall we move on to our long-acting reversible contraceptives?
Yes,
our LARCs.
So the LARCs are all progesterone-based. Except for copper.
Yeah.
So you've got hormonal LARCs and non-hormonal.
You're all about the forgetting the copper coil.
You know that I just love the Mirena coil. So I'm so excited to talk about it again. you've got your hormonal long-acting reversible and then your non-hormonal. On your hormonal side is the implant and the coil, and on the non-hormonal side is the copper coil.
Yeah. So the implant in the UK mostly is called the Nexplanon. It looks so it's about the size of a hair grip.
Okay, that's bigger than a Kirby grip.
Or a match, or like a match.
Yeah, it's like
that length.
I would imagine it would be a hair grip.
Yeah. But like that length.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
This was like 20 centimetres and this was like 4 centimetres.
4 centimetres. Okay. We'll give some context to this.
Of what on earth Lana's doing.
Like 2 millimetres diameter.
Oh, so she is a 4 centimetres long.
Yeah.
Very
little. Why was I expecting like a tube? Like...
No.
I have no idea.
No, very, very thin.
Then does this usually go in the arm?
It goes on the inside of your arm. So right or left, doesn't really matter. It's very easy to have it inserted. So you would go to a clinic, sexual health or GP. You would have a little injection with local anaesthetic at the site that it's going to go in. Mm-hmm. And then they use a device. It just sits right underneath your skin. It inserts the implant and then it comes out. So you do get a teeny tiny scar. So it's like a little dot where the implant's gone in.
A bit of bruising when...
You get a bit of bruising. You'll usually have a nice bandage, you know, to make yourself feel supported for a few days. And then when you have it removed, you have to have, again, you go to the same clinic. They'll put a little bit of local anaesthetic in, make a small cut where the implant sits and remove it. So you end up with two scars.
Not along the whole implant.
Just on the end.
Just on the end. And then kind of push it out.
Yeah. But these scars are tiny. You know, you don't see them.
And they're in place.
On the inside of your arm. I've had an implant before and I've got a little dot and a line and like no one ever notices it. Like it's tiny. I don't even notice it.
And when you've got the implant, can you see it?
No.
You can feel it.
Feel it, but not see it.
Which is nice, because then you know it's there. You're like, oh, there it is.
She's still in place.
Yeah. You should be able to feel it, but don't mess with it all the time, because they can get broken if you're like messing with it.
That'd be a lot of messing.
Some people, you know what they're like.
What's it made of?
It's kind of a flexible plastic.
Okay.
So if you were picking it up and you can bend it.
So it's not just going to snap.
Well, no, it won't snap. It's not fragile.
Yeah, it's not like you're going to...
Yeah.
Oh, it's broken.
No. You'd we have to be like trying to bend it and mess it.
Trying to snap it.
That goes through me a bit. Yeah.
I think actually squeamish for that.
You can have them put in when you've delivered your baby as well. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people We will speak to them on the postnatal ward after they've had a baby and say what you can do about contraception. And you could have an implant fitted at that time before you leave, if you would like to make sure that your contraception is done, sorted.
One and that'll do for now.
Yes.
And how long does that last for?
3 years. 3 years. It can stay for three years. Yeah. Wow. So you just have it changed or removed at 3 years.
That's way longer than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, is it?
Long acting.
Yeah.
Long acting reversible.
And from a failure rate, like the failure rate is tiny because it's there, can't move anywhere, you can't forget to take it.
Yeah.
If you have diarrhea, vomiting, it doesn't matter. Yeah. If you're on some medication that might
change things.
Great. All good. From that point of view.
Really good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So 5 in 1,000.
We'll get
pregnant. I don't know 1,000 people.
I definitely don't know 1,000, no.
No, no.
That's probably like my whole high school.
I don't know how many people are in my high school.
It was quite small.
But yeah, so you up to 3 years, you can have it, then you can have it changed if it agrees with you. Benefits are a lot of people will have reduced bleeding.
Yep, okay.
But downside to that is a lot of people also get, similar with the progesterone-only pill, a bit of spotting, irregular bleeding, not sure when it's going to be. So that if that's a problem for you, that might not be the contraceptive choice for you.
Also, bear with it.
Yeah, give it some time.
Your body needs to get it on board with something.
Get used to it.
It doesn't just have something put in and like, all right,
next
we're sorted
day.
Now. Like, don't work like that. You need to bear with it for a little bit.
It's with a lot of things, even like skincare.
Yeah.
If you get a new moisturiser or a new face wash, you need to stick with it for a few weeks before you see the benefits.
Yeah. It's funny because I'd be more willing to give that time.
People are very, I think generally we're quite an impatient nation and we...
Yeah, we're impatient nation. I like
that. We want things to like work straight away.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
But with contraception, it's just not the way.
No.
You need to give it a little bit of time to know if it's the right one for you or not.
Yeah.
You know, be on it for a week and then be like, don't like it. It's not. It's probably not that that's
it's
caused
it. You're still in your adaptive.
Yeah. Yeah. You're betting
you're just having a rubbish day or you're having like, it's not...
Bad week.
Yeah, obviously some people it's really not going to work.
And if you've had a bad 3 months and it's been just because of that,
then maybe you think about something else.
Fair enough,
totally fine. There are side effects, so as with every hormonal contraception, you might find that you're someone that suffers with acne or mood changes or weight gain. So if that seems to be because of the implant, then think about changing it.
Yeah. It shouldn't. There isn't proven that it does increase your weight. I think people just feel differently, so they potentially eat more or exercise less.
Yeah.
There are good studies done that it says that these don't increase your weight.
Yeah.
The only one I think that it's been proven that it can increase your weight is the Depo.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
So I think the rest of them, they actually haven't.
Yeah.
So I think that's
just listed
aware
as a side effect, isn't it? Because it's hard to prove what the cause of your weight gain is.
Yeah.
Is it that you've had the implant
there's
in,
so
or
many
is it other
lifestyle
things?
Factors
It could be like you're in a relationship and you feel better about yourself because your contraception's now sorted and like you're just eating a bit more
or
and exercising a bit less. Or
you've gone
to university and stopped the 10 activities that you used to do in the week before.
Yeah.
Like there is a lot of stuff.
And
again,
then,
when you have that fitted, if you have it fitted in the first 5 days of your period, you're covered.
Okay.
Nothing else needed.
Mm-hmm.
But you can have it fitted at any point.
Yeah.
And remember, like, you've got to get into a clinic. So don't be on top of that. So if you have it fitted, you need to make sure that you've not had unprotected intercourse in the 7 days before, in the 5 days before, and use barrier methods for 7 days after, and then you'll be covered, and then it's done. Like, the implant is like,
for 3 years,
it's
in,
it's done.
Mm-hmm.
Your contraception is sorted.
That's
obviously
good.
Doesn't protect you against STIs.
Yeah.
But I think it's really good, especially for anybody who is, as we said, working shifts, not sure where they're up to, can't be trusted upon to
chaotic lifestyle, which
chaotic.
We all have sometimes. Yeah.
Then it's actually a really
good
option.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that is the implant, and then we could move on to Alison's first.
My favourites. the levonorgestrel coil or intrauterine system. So you've got brand names, it gets confusing, but the Mirena. Mirena is the most widely used, but also the same thing is also called a Levocert. So exactly the same drug, same size and everything, it just has a different name.
It's a less fun name.
Yeah, Mirena Levocert.
Quite right.
And then you've also got slightly less dose of hormones, and you have less time that you can have it for, less duration of action. Kylena and Jada.
They come in slightly smaller,
to
be able to put them in. So for people that have not had children and that potentially are a little bit more nervous about having one fitted, then this could be more comfortable and an easier kind of in. But they don't last as long because they haven't got as much hormone in them.
Are they as effective?
Yeah, they're really effective. Just so with perfect use. So I guess we should probably mention how they're put in because that's kind of one of the downsides. We have done an entire episode on Marina and other injury treatment systems, which was our first ever episode, which was lovely.
Seems right now.
Jumping with that Marina episode.
The benefits of these is that they can, you know, completely reduce or stop your bleeding. Mm-hmm. They're very, very effective. You can keep them for up to 8 years for contraceptive reasons, depending on the type that you've got. Eight years,
I'd be like 32 at that point. Yeah, that's a long time. That feels forever
away.
Isn't
that amazing? You can just get it in and not think about
being
that old. Your fertility does return very quickly after you have them removed. If you don't like them, that you can be easily removed.
Yeah.
The main downside to them is having them inserted. So it is, you have to go to a clinic or a GP, and it isn't pain-free. It is a little bit painful, but have we released that video
We've
yet
not
for
released
you?
It yet.
Well, keep an eye out on the Instagram.
We've got a very fun video coming.
Yeah, Eleanor has been a guinea pig and she has filmed her.
I did choose to do this.
We didn't force you. Just like to give you a first-hand perspective on what it's like to go and have a Marina inserted. Yeah. No more gory details than that. But
we didn't film the actual process.
No. But that is the main thing that people are worried about.
Yeah.
So
should they be worried about it?
No.
But I was going to say, we need a bottom line fact here. Should we be worried about it?
It's painful. And there's no way of going about that. You're going to have a bit of pain. But the pain, for me, lasted 3 minutes max.
Yeah.
Like, it was a short amount of pain for a long time.
A long time,
up to 8 years.
And you do want to tell us what happens when you go and get one put in.
Yeah. So I went there, said hello to everyone, took me through, and they'll give you a bit of a Q&A about how you've been recently, if you're on other forms of contraception, that sort of thing. And then you do a pregnancy test to check you're not pregnant before you have it, because you can't have it put in if you're not pregnant.
If you are pregnant.
You want it if you're not.
And then they do a little setup, and they offered me some pain relief. Mm-hmm. So I had the pain relief, also took pain relief, took painkillers before going. And I did get a friend to drive me there as well, just in case I wasn't feeling great afterwards. So I had the pain relief, and they'll put a speculum in. And they explained this to me before as well. Put a speculum in, and they go in with a little device to measure the length of your womb. Mm-hmm. Came back out and just checked it was long enough for the coil to go in. It was. So they popped the coil in. So they, like, put it through your cervix.
Yeah.
And it opens up into your womb.
Perfect.
And then they brought it out, and I laid there for a few minutes, and then did my blood pressure. Had a little glass of water, and then I was ready to go.
Fortunately, you took a glass of wine.
I know. What clinic are you going to? That sounds great.
Had a little glass of water and a chocolate afterwards. Yeah. Before I head home.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Give me a little sweet treat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's most people's experience. So most people.
But you might
are
not
okay.
get a chocolate.
Yeah. We cannot guarantee.
I don't get wine.
I'm up for that. I think the bit that most people are scared of is getting an examination and getting a speculum.
That was the first time I'd ever had a speculum, and I was a bit like, I don't know what this is going to be like.
Yeah.
It just felt a little bit like pressure.
Yeah.
It definitely wasn't painful at all. Yeah. Just a bit of pressure and a bit of a weird feeling, really, because it's something that you've not felt before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But definitely not painful.
And it's all over within the space of like 5 minutes. It's not a long procedure. Yeah. It's very quick.
And the device looks scarier than it is as well. I feel like it looks like it's going to be
It looks kind of medieval, do you not
weird.
Think?
Yeah. What does a speculum?
Oh, the speculum.
Yeah. Oh, it's like a coil.
You meant the coil.
No.
It
feels kind
of cute.
The speculum.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Because
you don't really know what it's going to do. It's just a piece of plastic. This one was plastic, and I was like, I don't know what they're doing with that. But I asked her, I said, what is it that you're going to do? And she showed me. Mm-hmm. So if you're ever in doubt, just ask. People can explain anything for you.
We're not, when we're putting a speculum in, you're not stretching the vagina beyond any kind of capacity. If you think the vagina is a muscular tube, it's supposed to be able to expand.
Yeah.
When you're having intercourse, obviously a penis fits in. The speculum is not, it's just expanding slightly so that we can see your cervix.
Yeah.
Because when you've got a muscular tube, it's going to be flat together. So we need to be able to see where we're going.
Like the whole baby can come out of it.
Yeah.
Speculum is different, but smaller than a baby.
Yeah. I've got to say as well, so they'll close the curtains and they'll get you to undress from the bottom down, but they'll give you a sheet like to put over yourself so it doesn't feel as like, oh my god, they're just going to open the curtains and I'm here naked. So they did give you a sheet to put over you, which was good.
And it's good that you, really nice to hear like your experience of it. And I think that is how most people experience it as well. Like there will be a small number of people that find it more painful than that, but most people can tolerate it with the pain relief that's available. And that's really the key message. Yeah. It might seem really scary, but actually you will be able to cope with it.
Yeah.
If that's what you want, like if you want the coil.
You can't beat around the bush. It was painful while I put it in.
Yeah.
But such a short amount of pain.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is as well is it's kind of a bit of a shock because you're not, you don't really know what to expect.
Yeah.
As you said, you've not
even had
a speculum before.
Yeah.
So like, you're already a bit like, because you're having a speculum for the first time.
Yeah, I almost expected some sort of like sharp pain, but it literally, all I felt was just a strong cramp.
Like a big, strong cramp.
Yeah, because it's like your womb's just being like, no.
What are you doing?
Get out. Oh, okay, that's fine. Yeah, we'll keep you.
Having it removed is really easy. So once it's in...
A lot of people think it's much worse to have it removed.
Shouldn't be. So once it's in, you have these little threads that come through the cervix into the vagina. They get trimmed, so they're about 3-4 centimetres long. So when you want to have it changed or removed, you go back, you have a speculum exam, you can see these threads, you basically grip onto them, get you to do a big cough, and then pull at the same time, and it's out. It takes a second.
Yeah.
Might get a little bit of a cramp.
I feel like most people are out before they've had time to cough. Could you do a big cough? And they're like, what? And I'm like, it's out, you do it.
Yeah. They're very easy to come out.
Yeah, very straightforward most of the time. Not like... obviously some people will have a coil that migrates, they will have threads that can't be seen, but it really doesn't happen like people think it happens.
Yeah.
It's really uncommon for that to happen.
What that means as well.
So a coil, well, most of all, coils don't migrate. Like it's really, really, really uncommon for that to happen, and that could mean that the coil has embedded itself in the lining, like in your actual muscle of the womb, or it's gone out and through your womb and up and into your tummy. This, on the whole, will happen at the time of insertion, so it will have been inserted into the wrong place.
Yeah.
And people will be probably very uncomfortable after that's happened. They can migrate down, like into the cervix. Like if you're somebody who's bleeding very heavily, you've got a massive uterus, some people have bigger wombs than others, they can be distorted by fibroids. And if that's the case, sometimes coils can fall out or they can be displaced into your cervix.
So it's about 1 in 20 people that will have, if you're someone that has heavy periods or something that's distorting your womb, it's more likely to happen to you. But overall, the risk is like 1 in 20, the coil will come out, and it'll come out usually in the toilet or when you're having a heavy bleed, something like that. If it's out, it's out. It's not a problem. It just means you're not covered contraception-wise.
Most people sit there and have no problems whatsoever.
Yeah.
When I'm talking about the threads not being able to be seen, so if you've had your coil in and you're going to get it changed or you've decided that you want to have a pregnancy, you go, they have a look with the speculum and have a look at your cervix and they're like, oh, no threads. And that can literally be because your threads can have just been
pulled up into your cervix. Your cervix is like 4 centimetres long. Sometimes the threads are not visible in your vagina, but they're just in the cervix. It can be super easy to just use a little tool to grip onto them and then remove them. But in a small number of cases, you might need to go and have a procedure called a hysteroscopy, which is a camera that goes into the womb and then you can see the coil, grab onto it and remove it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think on the whole, people get really worried and have heard all of the bad stories, but as somebody who has worked at the women's since 2010, I've seen two that have migrated and needed an operation.
I think that's quite a long time to have only seen a couple. One every 7.5 years.
We'll take that because we see a lot of people at the women's. So I think that we need to... It's not for everybody, but it's a really good choice for a lot of people. It will make your bleeding lighter. Some people will have no periods whatsoever. Some people will have lighter bleeding. there with it again, the same as what we'd said about other forms of contraception. There's going to be a bedding in period, just like have a, you're going to just have to chill
give
for a little
chance.
While and,
yeah.
and give it a little
let
bit
it
of
settle.
Chance.
And if you're someone that does have heavy or painful periods, the Mirena or the Levocert is one of the first line treatments.
Yeah.
So you get two birds with one stone. You're covered from contraception point of view, but also you'll have a better life because your heavy painful periods will be improved.
Good for people with endometriosis.
Yeah.
Adenomyosis
as well.
It can be used as part of HRT as well.
Yeah.
So they've got loads of good things.
They're very versatile.
Yeah, and when, I know we said they're up to 8 years for contraception, they have different lifespans if you're using them for heavy
different
painful
stuff.
Periods, endometriosis, or HRT. So again, the person that puts it in will tell you exactly when it needs to come back out again. Not affected by diarrhea and vomiting, safe for breastfeeding. So there's loads of really good things.
Yeah. Is there no medications that interfere?
Well, no, because it's released locally into the womb, so it has its effect. It doesn't need to be it doesn't need to go through the liver to then be active. It's already active there in your womb. So you're safe.
And the same as what we said before about if you have it popped in your over your period, so at the beginning part of your cycle, then you're covered straight away.
Immediately.
If you have it put in at any other point of your cycle, then we need to make sure you're not pregnant. As you said, Eleanor, before, like you're not pregnant and you use barrier methods for 7 days after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you were changing your coil, so you've had one, you get the next one in.
That's fine.
You're fine. You're still covered. No, 7 days. Okay.
Covered.
The back to back pill.
Yes.
As long as you actually do that on the same day, just whip it out and pop it back
out. Out and then straight in. Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as you're within your time frame of it being effective. Obviously, if it's been 15 years,
yeah.
And then you get it changed. Yikes. You've not been protected for quite a while.
So coils can be left in for contraception when you're kind of going over the menopause, obviously, but you don't just leave your coil in for forever.
You do need it removing
because although most cases they won't cause any problems whatsoever, they could be a source of infection, so why have it in? So if you don't need it, why get rid, to be honest.
And then you've got the non-hormonal coil, which is, there's only one, the copper coil. So a lot of people choose this because it's a long-acting reversible contraception, but also has no hormones. So if you're someone that doesn't want any additional hormones or has experienced bad side effects from previous trials with different contraceptives, then that tends to be the people that go for a copper coil.
And if you need to be, something needs to be effective from today.
Yes. Okay.
Because the copper coil is effective instantly.
Yeah.
So you can use it as a form of
emergency contraception.
Oh.
Yeah. So the copper that's released, sperms don't like it, basically.
They don't like it. It's toxic.
So it's really good for emergency contraception and for if you need something straight away, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It works slightly differently, so it doesn't prevent ovulation.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps the lining of the womb kind of thin and is toxic to sperm.
I was going to say, it just keeps it toxic.
Yeah, it keeps it toxic. So the sperm might enter, but will not be able to, a fertilised egg will not be able to implant into the womb because it's a toxic copper environment.
So it doesn't change your hormones at all.
No.
So you are still going to have periods.
Mm, yes.
Your periods actually might be heavier and longer.
Your periods will be heavier. Everyone experiences heavier periods with copper.
So it's not good for treating problematic periods.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Definitely not. You will bleed, and most people will experience a heavier bleed. So if you already have heavy periods, it's not going to be good for you. It's going to put you at risk of anemia and, you know, not a great life.
But for some people, they really like it. They like to know when what their hormones are doing, know where they are in their cycle, but have contraception and a really good form of contraception, then the copper coil is really good for that.
And you can, so just because it gives you heavy periods, you don't actually have to live with them. You can take a non-hormonal tablet that can help make them lighter.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can just have your copper coil in, that gives you contraception, you're not on any additional hormones, and then when you know your period is coming, you can take something called tranexamic acid, which you can get from your GP, and it makes periods lighter. So there is, it's not like, oh, you're stuck with these heavy periods.
There's ways around.
It's definitely a method that a lot of people like, so
it has its
uses.
Lasts a while as well,
up to 10 years, so you can some are, you know, I think
there's
Flexi T, which is a newer one that's up to 7 years. You can have one up to 10 years.
There's all different ones.
But
again, if you have it fitted at 40, you can have it for over the menopause. It will still be a really good contraception, but you should have it removed when you do not
need when you do no longer yeah. need. Yeah.
Does it look the same as the Myrina coils?
Like very similar. Just
it looks
has
like a T,
bit
but you can
it.
Actually see the copper. So you can see like, it looks a bit like a wire yeah. wrapped around mm-hmm. like the body of the coil.
Yeah.
And the insertion device is different as well. It's one of those that we don't put many in the hospital, so I always have to make sure I've read the instructions yeah. before yeah. I put it in.
I did one the other day, I was like, I'll just refresh my memory. I'm about to insert this.
I mean, but it's pretty straightforward, yeah. but it's just you want to make sure you're doing it correctly. Yeah.
For you having it put in, it'll feel exactly the same, regardless of the type of coil that you're having put in.
Yeah. So and then natural methods.
So these are becoming more popular.
Yeah.
I think with certain people, it's again the benefit of you being in control. You're not having any additional medication or procedures to have the contraception. There are apps which exist that can help make it a little bit easier to track. Yeah.
I think the first thing that we need to say is that the withdrawal method is not a method of contraception.
Yes.
By any stretch of anyone's imagination.
We do not endorse that at all.
Well, because people say that they're using a natural method because they're not using hormones and they're using the withdrawal method. Not a method.
No.
Actually not a method.
Definitely don't agree that that's a method. That's just risky behaviour.
Like, it is. Like, it's just like you're basically just keeping your fingers crossed. And there's probably the same chance as somebody who is not using any form. So like 18 to 20% a month chance of getting pregnant.
Yeah.
Like, depends. Again, what are your chances? How do you feel about risk? But that is not a method of contraception.
I feel like that one's really like upset you both that people call it a method of contraception.
Well, because
I am upset by that. Like, fine, it might be something people do, but it's not a natural method of contraception. Like, you still could get pregnant, and people do.
Changing technique.
Yeah.
Well, because when you ejaculate, when a male ejaculates, they will have released lots of sperm before they ejaculate.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how you would time the withdrawal. Yeah. To
withdrawal
make
should
sure.
surely just be don't put it in.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Withdrawal
from sex. Abstinence. Yeah. But yeah, so that is not a method of contraception, it is something that people do. And if you do that, be aware that you might get pregnant.
Be very careful.
Fertility awareness is slightly different. So
yeah,
that's more
definitely
like,
aware. Definitely different. And this is a form of contraception in a sense.
So we have got an episode on how to get pregnant, which talks about when you're fertile in your cycle.
The ins and outs.
Yeah. The ins and outs. But yeah, essentially, if you have a regular cycle, so you have roughly one period every month, there's a certain time frame in which you are more fertile.
Yeah.
So that's leading up to and the day of ovulation.
Yeah.
So it's around about 5-6 days a month. If you're really good at predicting, so if you've got regular periods and you are also very aware of your cervical mucus change over your cycle,
some people track the temperature.
You can also do ovulation testing, I suppose, to check that.
See quite a lot about
where you're up to. And the plan here is not to get pregnant, so it's to have sex in the non-fertile period, not in the fertile period. So it gives you like 3 weeks ish of the month that you are not fertile. You have to be really on it. You have to be organised.
If you're a day out, then
you've got to be motivated, haven't you?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like when people have busy lives and stuff, have you been like, right, where am I up to with my period tracking?
And also things can affect your temperature. So if you didn't get much sleep the night before, if you've had a hot coffee in the morning, if you're a bit poorly,
if you're on holiday.
Ovulation testing is not a perfect form.
Yeah.
So there's, if it's for you, it's for you. But be aware that it's not perfect.
Even with perfect use, this is still 5 in 100.
Oh, wow.
Perfect use.
Yeah.
So that's somebody who is being like proper on it.
Typical use is more like up to 1 in 4 people will get pregnant.
Yeah.
So there's 4 of us right here.
So it's like the same chances as practically just getting pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, it's the benefits are there. You know, if you are organised, you want to do this and you think you can do it well and you can accept that there's a slightly higher risk of getting pregnant, but you want to avoid contraception, then that's for you and that's absolutely fine.
Nearly
there. So we've got one more.
There on our worldwide trip
adventure.
It has, contraception marathon.
Yeah.
We call it that.
Perhaps you could have done it. I felt like that we needed to go into everything because people can nip to the bit that they want to go to in the episode. And it's just so important because there are choices that people potentially, like, you've not heard of certain things.
And I think it's hard as well to be able to find what's right for you when a lot of the information out there people will seek from social media.
Yeah, definitely.
And what's right for someone else doesn't mean that it's right for you. And if something's, oh God, never get this, it don't mean that you shouldn't ever get it.
Like, don't just go with what your friends told you. Like, do a bit of research yourself, because there might be something you've never heard of that would be perfect for you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's worth doing a bit of research to find out.
Totally agree.
So yeah, permanent.
And these are because, although potentially some people try and reverse permanent contraception, they pretty much are permanent and cannot be reversed.
Yeah, especially on the NHS. So it's basically you've got male and female permanent contraception. For men, it's a vasectomy, which is cutting the tube that connects the testicle to the penis. Yes. The snip. And then in a woman, it is one version of clipping the tubes or removing the fallopian tubes, stopping that connection between the ovaries and the womb.
So the operation for a man is really small. It can be done under local anaesthetic. It's a, like a in and out kind of...
dead easy. I could do it.
If we read something before we did that.
Because men have got their testicles on the outside, women's ovaries and tubes are on the inside, so it's more accessible.
Easier to get. Yeah. So the risks that come with that operation are really very small, and the recovery is small. Like, there's lots of good things from that, and the amount of people that would get pregnant after a vasectomy, as long as you wait for the time period after you've had it, you need to check to make sure that your ejaculate is not containing sperms.
Yeah.
So that you would have that follow-up. Mm-hmm. Some people don't, and that's why, they end up getting it. That little time frame there.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
But it's a really good form of contraception. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about a failure rate of like 1 in 1,000.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Really good, yeah.
Great form of contraception. But some people don't fancy that, and that's obviously fine.
Yeah.
But I think we have to remember that for a lady to have a sterilisation, it's a much bigger procedure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they have to have a laparoscopy, which is a camera inside their tummy button. When we do a laparoscopy, on the whole, it's a low-risk procedure, but nothing we do is no-risk.
Not a no-risk.
Catchphrase.
Yeah, but it could come with, like, loads of risks.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen people that have had complications post-laparoscopies for... a laparoscopic sterilisation, and for various other situations. So I really think that you need to be very set on this. You've got to have a general anaesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
When we're just putting little clips on your tubes, the failure rate is still 1 in 200.
Okay.
So higher than a lot of the other forms of contraception.
You're better off having the implant or the coil of some sort. They're more effective.
Less invasive procedure as well.
But if we remove your tubes, then the chances of pregnancy is obviously much less.
Yes. A bit less. And so we are kind of moving towards that, because there's another benefit to... Yeah. So if you just clip your tubes, all you're doing is blocking the tube. But if you're removing someone's fallopian tubes, you're reducing their risk of ovarian cancer in the future. Because some ovarian cancers originate in the cells that line the tubes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So there's an added benefit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you shouldn't have that done to reduce your risk of ovarian cancer.
Yeah.
Not for everyone. No.
Yeah,
no.
People need to really think about that before you have that as a contraception. Some people actually might have their tubes clipped or cut when they have a cesarean section as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for like
so that is another
option. Yeah, which is a good option.
I guess that's a good time to do it.
Yeah, but you can see it from a lot of different ways, because if there's a problem then with the baby, or if you've done it not in the heat of the moment, because you definitely need to be consented way before you have the cesarean section. But I do think that there could be more regret in that situation, because it's kind of a bit more in the moment. And also at that time, you've got a massive blood supply to your womb, and obviously everything around there, the tubes... I've usually got these massive vessels running along the bottom of them.
Huge vessels. You look at them and you're like, oh God, I don't want to go near those.
It lengthens the operation.
Yeah.
So there are pros and cons to having the procedure done like that. It's not quite as straightforward.
It's not as perfect as we made it sound.
Usually best case scenario, you're absolutely sure you're having an elective C-section and it's safe to do.
Yeah.
If it's an emergency or there's lots and lots of blood vessels there, and it would make it a more risky procedure, the person might recommend you go for something else.
Yeah.
But that being said, you can have things like, you can have a marina inserted at a C-section.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you can have an implant put in. After. You can start the pill straight away.
I feel like getting the marina after you've had a baby, it kind of gets two birds in one stone.
Yeah.
You don't have to go through the pain again. You're already going to be in enough pain.
Yeah, you've already gone through it all, so just pop in a coil in at the end.
Yeah, that'll be nothing compared.
So yeah, it's so the main drawback really of female sterilisation is the failure rate. Like it's not a really high failure rate, but it is there, and there are other less invasive methods that are more effective. Mm-hmm. But one of the main drawbacks for both of them is that they're not reversible on the NHS.
No.
So you can get them on the NHS, but then if you change your mind, they will not reverse it. You have to pay privately, and there's no guarantee that your fertility will return.
I was going to say, I assume that's not a perfect reverse.
Not perfect, especially if your tubes are like, there's no way you're going to be fertile again after that.
Vasectomy reversals are really, they don't work in a lot of time. You would be better just having a TZ, getting sperms out, because you produce the sperm still.
A
TZ? So getting a testicular aspiration, so you're going into the tubules,
getting
the sperm out and banking it and using it rather than kind of trying to do a tiny operation.
And actually just mentioning as well, so a lot of people will think that if you've had a vasectomy, it's going to affect when you have sex. It won't.
No.
You will still ejaculate. It just won't have sperm in it. And if you're a woman and you've had your tubes clipped or removed, you will still have periods.
Yeah.
So you still have ovaries, you still have a uterus. So they will still be.
So a lot of people feel that their periods are heavy and more painful after they've had their tubes clipped, but that's because they were probably on hormonal contraception before they had their tubes clipped.
And you can carry on hormonal contraception for your periods if you want to afterwards. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to think about, I think, with regards to permanent contraception choices. And I think now, when there are so many different things available, that should be and could be a more of a last resort situation.
Yeah. And then we were just going to touch on kind of newer, more exciting future avenues. Because as we've said, there's been no like new contraception really for women in the last like more than 80 years. So male contraception is something that's a hot topic.
Yep.
And there are a couple of things that are on the horizon, not currently available. So one of those things is a hormonal gel, which is something that can be put onto the skin, like the shoulder, daily. And it works by suppressing sperm production. So for this gel in trials, it's not available, but in trials, because obviously everything needs to be tested and shown that it works before it's available, 86% of men had effective sperm suppression. So it's not amazing, but it's there. And obviously it's not a finished product yet, so there's more to be done.
Could that be used alongside?
Could be.
Some sort of other contraception?
Yeah. Again, you could, you know, if you're really worried about it, you could use that plus a condom. Then you know that'll increase.
Yeah. You could the male partner could do that, and you could use the pill.
Yeah, you could. Double effect.
But also, if you both forgot to do it,
still.
Well, maybe then you're covering. You know,
yeah.
If you forget, I'll do it. If you forget, I've done it.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's also the male pill, which has had a lot of media. So the male pill would be something that would be taken every day, and it doesn't have hormonal side effects. So it would work by blocking vitamin A, and vitamin A is needed for sperm production.
Mm-hmm.
So in animal trials, mm-hmm. it's been shown to be 99% effective at reducing sperm, but also having no effect on testosterone. Because I think a lot of men are worried about, you know, is it going to reduce my testosterone? Is it going to make me less of a man? It wouldn't. And there are human trials currently underway.
Yeah.
So keep your eyes out for that.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a place for it. I think some people are worried that as a woman, you wouldn't be able to rely on a man to take a pill every day because it's at the end of the day you that would get pregnant and therefore you that
they
has the responsibility.
Have the direct consequence.
But in some, you know, you might trust your male partner.
And so there's a chance.
There's a chance there that it has a place. And it's nice that we're focusing on men also having responsibility to prevent pregnancy, not just women.
Yeah, I feel like we have to emphasise that a lot of these contraceptions are contraceptions from not getting pregnant rather than against getting STIs. Yes.
Exactly, yeah.
It's only really the barrier methods that are going to... Well, not even only
prevent.
Really,
it is
only
it
the,
is
barrier
only the barrier methods
that
are
going to prevent you from getting an STI.
Yeah. There is actually, there's a group in America and other places, I think, working on combining contraceptive pills with anti-HIV medication. So it's really interesting. So like obviously to prevent HIV, if you know that you're going to be exposed, you can take something called PrEP, which is a medication, and they're looking at combining this into a contraceptive pill. So it would be really useful for people who work in high-risk situations, well, sex workers, or if you live in an area that's got a really high prevalence of HIV, then you'd be covered for HIV transmission as well as contraception all in one go.
That's pretty good.
Which is pretty cool. So that's another kind of new thing. But other than that, there's nothing new.
We need some more money to do some more work.
Research. But
Okay. I think that was a whirlwind tour of
it. Yeah.
Sure. We have been all around the houses.
I think we've covered a lot of these questions we're about to try and
get. Okay, that's fine.
We've got some very interesting myths as well.
Okay, yeah. Another good myth.
So we would like to know, when you come off hormonal contraception, does your tasting partner change?
Because we have both seen this.
We've seen this around.
Really?
Yeah.
Eleanor sends it to me and it was like, when you come off hormones, you won't fancy your boyfriend anymore. And we're like, ah, I'm scared.
I mean, all we can answer is, I hope that that's not the case. Like, I know. I don't think there's any scientific proven evidence behind that. There's, you know, mood changes with contraception, coming off the pill or whatever you're on might affect your mood, and that might make your partner really irritated.
If you don't like your partner before or after contraception,
maybe you should.
Then you're probably with the wrong person.
And I think people blame a lot of things on various different hormones, and I wonder whether actually there is anything in it, really.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll still like them. Yeah. quite similar to that, people have mentioned this sort of crash when they come off hormones. Is there any evidence of that? Are you going to slump post-hormone?
You're not going to slump, but you're going to feel differently.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have been taking something that keeps you in a really steady state for a long time. Mm-hmm. And when you stop that, you're going to have your own hormones doing their own thing, kicking in at different times of the month.
And I guess trying to come back to their normal.
Yeah.
And you are also then going to be, as Nick said, like, you're not in this steady state of hormone suppression. Mm-hmm. You are going to be having fluctuations in your mood based on where you are in your cycle.
Yeah.
So you might be someone that then finds you actually have really bad PMS and you really suffer before your period.
I think it's going to be more to light if you're on the combined pill, whereas if you're on the progesterone only pill or a Mirena or any other of the progesterones and you're still ovulating, then you probably still you're still having like a peak trough, different mood changes, different cervical discharge, different. You're going to still have that kind of stuff. Mm. So I would imagine it's more for somebody who's been suppressed on a combined for a long time and then come off that and then they're like, oh, these are my hormones. This is what happens with me.
Mm-hmm. Great. Another one, that your partner will be able to feel your coil threads whilst you're having intercourse.
Yeah, I think we get asked this a
lot. Or even that it's going to hurt them.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not going to hurt them.
No.
That will be the first thing. Sometimes partners can feel the coil threads, especially if you're in certain positions, but it's not going to hurt them.
No. It's not stabbing them.
No,
it's not going to be painful. It might just be a sensation that they notice.
Yeah.
Equally, one way to check that your coil is in place is to put fingers in your vagina and feel the threads, so you can feel what it feels like yourself. They're not painful. They are just like, it's just like a little thing.
So when when you're feeling for your own threads, obviously you've got your cervix, which is in your vagina. Your cervix is kind of a harder structure, so you'll be able to feel that. And then out of the end of your cervix, you'll be able to kind of just feel a string. Mm. And mostly strings are kind of tucked up behind the cervix, so you're not even going to feel an end of a string.
So you start
you're going to feel like
you can just feel a little plasticky thing there.
So people definitely shouldn't be worried about that kind of thing.
No.
That was good because someone had actually asked us how to check IUD threads.
Oh, perfect.
But another myth is that...
The IUD, just to go back to that, because we do actually get asked about that a lot, and some people get grossed out about it, and it's not to be grossed out. Make sure you've got clean hands. You can do it. A lot of people would do it in the shower. Mm-hmm. Some people can't do it while they're stood up, so you would do it if you were laying down.
Yeah.
So have a think about what is the best position for you to be in to feel your threads. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not something to be freaked out about at all.
It's just a vagina. Don't be freaked out or
just
scared
a vagina.
Of it. It's just a vagina.
So the next myth was that breastfeeding is a totally effective form of contraception.
Oh, that's a really good one. So it can be. Mm-hmm. So it's called lactational amenorrhea. So breastfeeding and no periods. Essentially, if you are exclusively breastfeeding, so you're not mixing with bottle, you are only breastfeeding your child, it can suppress your ovulation, and it's because your prolactin is really high, and that can be really effective. But if you're not exclusively breastfeeding, then a little sneaky egg might just get released, and then you might be at risk of pregnancy.
As soon as your periods come back, definitely
you're not protected.
And when your baby starts eating as well, it's only for the first bit when you are fully breastfeeding and you are not having periods.
Okay. So the maximum it's going to benefit you is going to be about 6 months, because that's when babies will start to wean usually.
Mm-hmm. But if you're worried, then just use a form of contraception.
There's lots of contraception that is safe to use while you're breastfeeding. So there's other options.
Pretty much every contraception is safe when you're 6 weeks down the line from breastfeeding. Yeah. Okay. So, and most are safe from the beginning if you're not breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. So as long as you've kind of decreased your clot risk and you're fit and well otherwise, then most forms of contraception can be used. So don't be worried about that. Yeah. And you will get asked about it. You'll get asked when you leave the hospital, if you deliver in hospital, and you should be asked at your GP as well when you go for a little checkup. So there'll be various different times that people will be pushing that contraception.
Another one, IUDs are only for people that have had children. I feel like we've already said.
I've had no children and I've had three.
Three IUDs, zero babies.
Very effective.
No, I think people are more worried when they've not had children, and they hear more, in inverted commas, horror stories. Yeah. But actually, Eleanor's given a very eloquent talk about what happened. Yeah. And yes, anybody can have a I nearly said a migraine. Anybody can have a coil.
Yeah, you don't have to have had children.
And it doesn't have to be a migraine. Yeah.
It could be a Levisert.
Yes.
Kylina.
I think we've said we might do a whole episode on emergency contraceptions, but one of the things that we saw out there was that if you take sort of too many emergency contraceptives, you know, if you've used it multiple times, that could reduce your fertility.
It doesn't reduce your long-term fertility, but if you're finding that you're needing to rely on emergency contraception frequently, you probably need to think about going on some sort of long-term contraception. But yeah, no, we are going to cover different types of emergency contraception in a separate episode, because this one's already a bit of a mammoth.
You're still with us.
Thank you. Thank you for holding on.
Yeah. And then lastly, we've got a few questions.
Yep, perfect. Mm-hmm.
So someone's asked, why does the Evra patch cause breakthrough bleeding?
This is the same as why anything causes breakthrough bleeding. Yeah. So it's that whole, your body getting used to it, making sure that you're changing it at the correct time. Mm-hmm. But it might just be the not the right contraception for you. We don't have any other patches that you can change to in the UK. Mm-hmm. So have a think, would a vaginal ring be more suitable if it's something that you want that's a little bit more prolonged and it's got both hormones in? Or could we think about the pill? Mm-hmm. One contraception is not going to be suitable for everybody. And different people will get breakthrough bleeding at different times. And if it's like a one-off, don't even think about it. It might be just that, like, you've done a bit more, you've done a bit less, you've not slept as well, you're stressed, you're not eating. Like, people can miss a period or have a period a bit early and get really kind of worked up about it. Yeah. Don't worry. Like, your body does, it only ovulates like 85% of cycles. Like, just
it's got a lot to
chill
be
out.
Doing.
Like, I think just
let it do its thing.
We did have a question asking if there are any effective non-hormonal contraceptives, and I guess we've mentioned the copper coil.
Loads.
Have we missed anything?
Well, condoms, diaphragms, and copper coil, and then they're the most effective.
Yeah,
and then you've got your fertility tracking methods as well, but pulling out is not a form of contraception.
And we've been asked, does missing a pill mean I will get pregnant?
On the whole, no. And if you've been taking it for a long time, pretty much definitely not. Mm-hmm. But as we've said before, if you've missed one, then take it and remember that you are covered.
Yeah.
If you've missed more than one, then think about barrier methods for that time.
Follow the rules for your pill.
Follow the rules for your pill. Obviously, be careful with those ones that you're taking every day. You know, the combined ones that are 28 days, because there'll be different rules for those.
Yes, that's a good point.
And
just don't take them backwards then as well. Take them in the order.
Don't lucky dip it.
No, do follow it.
Generally, I've seen someone before who got all their pills and they would like open them out of the packet and put them into like a jar and have a little pill jar.
You can't do that
with one of those, because you'd be picking out one of your non-pill pills.
That'd be fine on the day that
you need a pill.
It'd be fine for a progesterone only pill, but it wouldn't be for one of these newer pills. Generally have the number, so if you're on the progesterone only pill, if it's been more than 12 hours, then you need to take barrier contraception as well. And if it's more than 48 for a combined, then it's barrier methods.
Well, you need to just take the last one and then you'll be covered, but only if you've not missed it for a prolonged period, then have 7 days.
So, like, 12 and 48 are
be
the numbers.
Careful. And then last but not least, we have been asked what else the contraceptives can do. And I guess we've touched on that a little bit. Periods, bad periods, endometriosis.
Yeah, most of the hormonal methods have the benefit of lighter or no periods, improved pain as well.
And there are studies to say that they help with endometriosis. So
yeah, that's great.
Myrina, combined pill, progesterone-only pill. Mm-hmm. So there are options when people mm-hmm. have endometriosis. Like, surgery's not the answer for everyone.
Yeah.
Slash a lot of people, because a lot of people will suffer after surgeries as well. Mm-hmm. We don't have the data that tells us that have a surgery and your endometriosis is going to be better.
Yeah.
So I think we also need to be thinking about other options. Mm-hmm. And yeah. hormones aren't for everybody, but they're a good option for a lot of people. Mm-hmm.
Great,
yeah, I think that was everything. We have reached the finish line.
Okay.
Oh my God, we made it. So as always, just a very quick disclaimer to say that everything we've expressed are our own opinions and shouldn't be taken as direct medical advice and are not affiliated with where we work.
Yeah, so make sure you follow us wherever you listen to this podcast.
And follow us on all of our socials at Between Two Ovaries.
Thank you.